Hi, my name is Daryl Miller, and I'm an API evangelist on the API management team. I'm going to talk to you today about how API management can add many features to your API with minimal work on your part. You built an API, deployed it as an API app into Azure App Service. Now what? Well, you probably want to share it with perhaps other developers in your enterprise, or perhaps you want to turn it into a product and make a business out of it. But before you can share it, you also want to know that you can control access to it. If one developer abuses that API, you want to know who and be able to take action to ensure a good experience for all of the consumers of your API. You want to be able to support your API easily, and there are all kinds of ways that API management can help you do that. Azure API Management is a gateway service that sits between apps that will consume your API and your API implementation. It also includes a developer portal for documentation, self-service sign-up, API key management, and a developer console for exploring the API, and even an issue tracker for developers to report issues with the API. The developer portal takes the idea of the Swagger UI that you saw in the API apps video and takes it to a whole new level by incorporating it into a customizable portal that provides a professional front end to your API. There is also a publisher portal for you to be able to configure the gateway service and to see analytics about your APIs. This is the API Management Publisher Portal, where you, as an API provider, can manage all of the APIs that you've built. In order to control the entire surface area of the API, API management needs to know what operations exist in your API. In Mohit's API Apps video, he showed how to generate a Swagger document from a web API using the Swashbuckle library, and we can use that document to describe our API to API management and identify the available operations. This can be done using the import API function. We can import from both Waddle and Swagger formats, and we can bring it in from the clipboard from a file or from a URL, and we can create new APIs and update existing APIs based on an updated Swagger definition. Now, I've already gone ahead and created the Conference API app. And Conference API is a demo application that I built that has a variety of operations for identifying speakers and sessions and topics for a particular conference. Now that we have defined our API in API management, we want to give people controlled access to it. API management defines the notion of products. Products are a way of giving different people access to different APIs with different policies applied to those APIs and the operations within the API. In this example, we start out with Starter and Unlimited, and I've added a new product called Enhanced. So Starter is a simple one that you can give out. It is highly constrained in the number of requests that can be made to it. There's up to 5 calls per minute and a maximum of 100 calls per week. It's something that you can give away for free, and it allows somebody to just get a taste of your API. The Unlimited subscription is something that, well, as it says, is unlimited. There is no rate constraining. And then we have Enhanced, which sits somewhere in between. We have a higher level of rate limiting, and we also allow people to sign up for multiple subscriptions. So that if people want to build multiple different client applications against the API, they can do that with this particular type of product. Now, not all products will be visible to all developers who sign up in your portal. You can make some products only visible to users who you assign to certain groups. And by default, there's only 2 groups. There's administrators and there's developers. But you can create whatever groups you need to segment your target customers. And this allows you to create special products for influential community people, open source projects, or partner companies that you're working with. And this is a key capability in being able to market your API effectively. Developers who are creating a client application for an API can sign up in the developer portal. The sign-up process has all those bells and whistles like a CAPTCHA and a verification email. the developer can then choose to subscribe to one of the products that they can see. The enhanced subscription allows multiple subscriptions, and here we're subscribing to get a second set of API keys for a second client we're building. Once subscribed to the product, the developer will be assigned a primary and secondary key. Having two keys allows a new key to be introduced and an old key phased out, either through some expiration mechanism or by forcing a client upgrade. Back in the publisher portal, we have a section called policies. One of the primary reasons for configuring products, defining APIs, and describing the operations on those APIs is to enable us to apply policies to HTTP traffic passing through the API management gateway. One of the primary architectural features of the web is the notion of a layered architecture. The idea is that distributed systems can be chopped into layers where HTTP is used to isolate each layer of the system. This allows new layers to be inserted transparently. These new layers can add new capabilities into the system. API management is one such layer. It acts as a platform for deploying all kinds of useful middleware components that can be applied to subsets of traffic passing through it. API management policies represent built-in middleware components that can do useful manipulation of HTTP traffic. And these built-in mechanisms can also be significantly enhanced through the use of C# snippets compiled by Roslyn. Most policies can be applied at the intersection of up to three different scopes. They can be applied against all traffic, traffic for a single product, for a single API, or even for a single operation. The policies are defined through an XML document. The XML is useful because it does allow us to add comments, and it is fairly simple because there are no namespaces in the XML. So what can we do with these policies? We've already discussed how API management can limit access to the backend using keys that identify the client developer. However, we can also use policies to aid in authenticating the users, the end users, of a client application. API management uses its own custom header for passing the developer key to the gateway. This leaves the standard authorization header available for identifying the end user of the client application. It's common these days for security systems to use what are called JWT tokens as a way of conveying a signed set of claims to a back-end system. API management provides a policy to verify JWT tokens and optionally ensure that certain claims are present. Just for demo purposes, I only applied the JWT token security to a single operation. So if we navigate to our API and to the get speakers operation, you'll see that we have a small fragment of XML here, which is the validate JWT or JWT policy. Contained inside is the secret that is used to sign to make the signature. Now, this isn't exactly the secret key. It's a Base64 encoded version that just makes it easier to embed the secret into our XML document. If I pull up a small console application that I wrote, you can see how that JWT token can be created and passed. So here we simply create an HTTP client instance. I pass message handler in just so we can debug and send some output to the window. And I set the developer key in the custom header, and I set a user agent. I create a request object, HTTP request object, and point it to our speakers resource, because that's where I have defined the JWT token validation policy. And then I call this method to add a JWT token header. In this method, you'll see we have a small dictionary object which contains the set of claims that I am declaring. We also have the secret key, And I'm using a third-party library here to encode the payload along with the key to produce the final token. This is an open source library available on NuGet. Microsoft have an official library, but I just wanted to demonstrate that it doesn't require any magic for Microsoft libraries. You can use any standard JWT encoding library. We take that token, we add it to the authorization header because that's the best place to put security information, and then we make an HTTP request. If I run this, you will see the execution of the request in the console. We make a GET request, we have our authorization header with the long JWT token, and we get a 200 OK response back. If I made a mistake with the secret key, you'd get 401 unauthorized. And that is an example of how API management policy can easily be applied to add value to your API. API management does not constrain how those JWT tokens are obtained, and the only constraint it does apply is that there must be an issuer and expiration claim included in the token. Client application developers are free to use any kind of identity server for authenticating users and for obtaining tokens. There are a number of other demonstration videos that we will link to that show how this policy can be used in combination with identity providers such as Azure Active Directory. My purpose here is just to show the simplest thing that works and be as free from any magic as possible. For scenarios where JWT tokens are not available or appropriate, then there are policies that we can use to make HTTP requests to some custom API that can do token validation. We'll see an example of making an external call in a moment. But JWT token validation is not the only way API management can help with security concerns. If we look at this particular policy configured here, you'll see we have this fragment called cores. For APIs that are consumed by code executing within a web browser, it may be necessary to support this cores protocol or cross-origin request sharing. This can be achieved simply by dropping this fragment of XML in. This is something that's also done by API apps, but it can be done at the particular operation level by API management. It's also really easy to do things like enforcing that the user agent is present in a particular request and failing if it isn't. This is something that GitHub do in their API. And also, you can see in our outbound section of the policy, I'm deleting a whole load of headers that are produced by backend servers. It's possible that some of these headers might potentially disclose security-sensitive information like server versions and framework versions, so we can use policies to remove those. This is particularly useful in enterprises where API management might be used to protect many different APIs produced by different teams who may not be aware of these security concerns. To prevent excessive usage of your API, and to be able to create premium tiers for customers with high usage requirements, there exists policies to apply both rate limiting and quota management. But these policies can only be applied at the product level, and they apply across all APIs that are accessible to a client developer. If we look at the enhanced product, we'll be able to see the policies that have been applied for rate limiting here. Very simply, for rate limiting, we limit 60 calls within 10 seconds. And for quota, we allow 100,000 calls and a megabyte of bandwidth within this renewal period, which is a week. In order to see this in action, we're going to go back over to a console application. So here we have the same kind of console application I knew up in HTTP client. And I'm just going to loop around and call the sessions resource multiple times. Now, note I'm using this .result. I can do this because I happen to be in a console app. It's not a good practice to use dot result. Use await and async and await wherever possible. But in this case, it does work just fine. So let's run this. And you'll see I'm hitting that API a whole bunch of times. And if it's flashing by, you'll see I'm getting 200 okay, 200 okay, until we hit our threshold, and then we're going to hit 429. But then the threshold resets, and we go back to getting 200. So you can see here we had a 429 too many requests, retry after one second. And then obviously that renewal period passed, and we were able to get a 200 okay. There are a couple of interesting points to note about these rate limiting and quota limiting policies. You'll notice that the policies sit in the inbound element and before the base element. And this allows the rate policies to be applied before the backend server is called. So even though we are actually responding with the 429 response, it is the front-end API management server that is absorbing all of that load, and there's no load being passed on to the backend. Now, we would hope that the client would respect that 429 and the retry after period and wait the recommended amount of time before making that request. But even if they do ignore that, at least we're not putting any load on your backend. The other really nice facility with the quota management is as a developer approaches their bandwidth limit for within the renewal period, they will receive an email notifying them that, look, you're at this certain level and you're approaching your limit. So it's all of those nice kind of features that API management, publisher and developer portal bundle in that make it such a good experience. Up till now, we've talked a lot about protecting your API, and we've shown a number of ways that API management can assist in that effort. Now we should consider how API management can help you provide the best possible support to your customers. The most obvious way we can help developers is through the developer portal. The portal acts as a place to discover APIs that are available. You can read documentation about those APIs, and you can do some simple exploration of those operations. The documentation that can be provided can be rich HTML, and the sample code that's shown in the documentation can be completely customized to make the onboarding process as painless as possible. Developers can explore the API directly by clicking on the Try It button. They can fill in the parameters that are required to execute the operations and then make those requests and see the results immediately. Part of being able to provide good support to developers involves having a good understanding of how your APIs are being used. In the publisher portal, we have both a high-level dashboard that shows statistics about the current usage of APIs, and also an analytics page that shows who is using your API and which operations they are using. You can see statistics by geography and by data volumes, and you can see who is experiencing failed requests and what operations they are trying to access. All of this information allows you to support your customers in a more proactive manner. We can be even more proactive by taking advantage of API Management's ability to integrate with third-party systems that have real-time alerting mechanisms. By returning back to our policies and the policies for our particular API, you can see here we have a more sophisticated policy. It's actually making a HTTP request using this send one-way request and making a request to a Slack webhook and doing a post. I'm taking advantage of the C# snippet mechanism in order to format the body to send the post request. And we use the choose and when control flow structure to say only send this one-way request if the status code is greater than or equal to 400. So if our gateway sees any response come back with more than 400, then post a message onto our Slack channel. And in order to see this working, I have a console application here, and we're making a call to request show me all of the sessions by for a particular day, but I've chosen an invalid day. So I'm going to make this request, run this request, and you'll see the request goes out. We get a 400 bad request come back, and in a moment, we should see a Slack notification pop up. And if I click on the Slack notification and bring up my Slack client, you'll see here I have this message appearing in my Slack application. There you go, just took a little moment to appear here. Now, sending messages to kind of a chat client like Slack or HipChat or something like that is good if the message volume is fairly low. You're not going to want a stream of messages appearing in there. In the cases where we want to log a more high volume number of events, there's an alternative approach that we can take. If I just minimize these and go back to our publisher portal and go back up to the top level scope, have another policy here. Full screen, configure policy. So this is what we call log to event hub. See, the problem with making post HP requests from within our policy mechanism is if we were making a very high volume of requests, we might end up with back pressure from the external system that causes our gateway to slow down. So what we can do here is we can log to a service called Event Hub. It's an Azure-based service that is designed to ingest very high volumes of information. And in this case, what we're doing is we're taking the entire HTTP message, well, with a truncated body, and we're sending the request over to a specially configured logger on Event Hub, and then we're sending the response over to a specially configured logger on Event Hub. And this information will be stored, persisted in that Event Hub until consumers go and pick up the messages. So I happen to have built a handy little listener that listens to Event Hub for these messages, and I'll show you the power of this particular policy. So I'm just going to start up a small console application that's going to start listening to the Event Hub, and it's going to forward the messages along, so we'll see that in a moment. Now, if I go back to my console application, and I've created just a few requests here, so we're going to run this, and we're going to make a few requests go through. So we've made a request to the sessions by a particular day, a list of all the speakers, and the topics. Now, those requests have now been sent to Event Hub, and you will see they've just appeared here, and they got forwarded to a third-party service called Runscope. If we minimize these and go over to the Runscope Traffic Inspector, you'll see now immediately we get a complete representation of the request and the response live in this third-party service. And the power of Event Hubs is really the fact that you can push these requests to this third-party service and then have listeners consuming those without adding any additional load onto the gateway, and you can push them anywhere. There are built-in mechanisms to push them into Stream Analytics for doing very sophisticated analytics that can then be pushed into Power BI. The possibilities are endless in what you can do with the log to event hub mechanism. Now, I realize I went through that example rather quickly, but in the final slide, there will be links to articles that go into those examples in much more detail with pointers to all of the source code. Now, the one final feature that I'd like to talk about, we've talked about how to protect your API, we've talked about how to provide a better experience by helping to support the developers of your API. There is one other major facility that API management provides, and that is helping to improve the performance of your API. And it can do that by enabling server-side caching of your API. Caching can be enabled for specific operations within your API. If we drill into the list of operations that are available and select, for example, this is the home resource. So it's a resource that appears at the root of the API and allows you to discover other resources that are in the API in a dynamic way. And this particular resource is one that does not change very often. It's important to understand the life cycle of a particular resource in order to be able to enable caching, because you need to be able to identify how long can this particular resource be considered fresh for. So enabling caching is as simple as checking a checkbox and then specifying a duration to say how long this particular resource can be served up without going back to the back end. The API management server will take care of returning the most recently returned response without communicating with the backend. Once that time has expired and a new request comes in, then API management will forward the request and get a new up-to-date copy. It's easy to underestimate this apparently simple feature, but HTTP caching can significantly improve the scalability of your API. And with API management, it can be turned on by simply clicking a checkbox. Azure API management takes advantage of the HTTP architecture to allow you to transparently add large amounts of essential functionality to your API. It does this by providing a highly configurable platform for deploying reusable middleware components and code. This allows you to focus on building your API and letting API management take care of the grunt work. Be sure to check out our documentation center. We have lots of other articles and videos explaining how to take best advantage of API management. And if you'd like to get a feel for what the developer portal is like to use, then sign up for an account at conference.azureapi.net.